Blog Talk Radio.
Doing today? Ooh, jam-packed show. It is fun. It is fun. I'm singing a song. Got the Neil Gorsuch. Not even going to bother trying to pronounce it. I'm just going to go Neil Gorsuch. He's got a hearing going on right now, confirmation hearing, to try to become a Supreme Court Justice. And it is sad to watch. I don't think I'm going to get into it too much now. I might get into it on Kyle and Corin tomorrow. As everybody's probably gotten used to at this point, tomorrow there will be a, you know, Kyle and Corin hits YouTube at about 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock Eastern time. So instead of the live show, Kyle and Corin, midweek Kyle and Corin tomorrow, which I'm kind of digging. Might talk about it then, but I watched some of it this morning. It's like a festival of bullshit. That's the best way I can describe it. So we're going to talk about that and about a million other things. That will be tomorrow, but for today, let me give you a little rundown of what you have to look forward to. President Trump's approval rating is out. Got a new approval rating for the big guy, and it's bad. I don't know how else to describe it. You'll see. I'm gonna lead with that. Then we have a meeting with the Iraqi prime minister. You're gonna see how that went. Spoiler, not good. Got Mike Pence, who is getting an award for his work for women. You heard that correctly, so I decided to do this radical thing of actually looking through his record on women. We have Tommy Lahren, who I normally absolutely despise, and there was a disconnection there. I do not know why, but fear not. I am back now. And a giant fuck you to Blog Talk Radio is my general takeaway from that. Okay, where was I? Iraq, President Trump, ready, set, go. President Trump had a meeting at the White House with the Iraqi Prime Minister, and he made some news because he said this.
So perhaps we shouldn't have gone in, and certainly we shouldn't have left. We certainly should never, ever have left.
Yeah, so that's his new position on Iraq. Perhaps we shouldn't have gone in, but definitely we never, ever left. We should have never, ever left. Okay, add this to the list of the other 300 contradictory positions he's had. In fact, I want to take a minute here to look at his record and his various comments on what we should have done in Iraq.
I'm the only person
listen up here.
The only one
that fought against going into Iraq.
I didn't want to go into Iraq.
I've been against it for years. Did you oppose the war before the invasion in March of 2004?
Yes, I opposed it all the time.
Is there a record of that?
You have to understand, probably.
I mean, you can look back to 2004, 2003.
2002, 2003.
Are you for invading Iraq?
Yeah, I guess. So, you know, I wish it was. I wish the first time it was done correctly.
Did you think, Howard, that you thought it was a good idea?
No, this was before the war started.
It looks like a tremendous success from a military standpoint.
The war is a total catastrophe.
Who do you blame?
And they have a civil war going on.
Who do you blame?
Well, there's only one person you can blame, and that's our current president. I would like to see our president get us out of the war.
You know how they get out? They get out. That's how they get out. Declare victory and leave.
I would announce that we have been victorious in Iraq and all the troops are coming home. And let those people have their civil war. Anybody that wants more troops going over to Iraq, I think, can't win an election.
Iraq, we shouldn't have been there, and I get him out real fast. We shouldn't be out of there.
We should have left our 20,000 soldiers there. They should have left soldiers behind, like 20,000.
We should have left some people. They deceived us because they didn't take care of the Kurds. They didn't take care of the whole thing. ISIS formed because these people... we're not allowed to partake.
We just took everybody and left, and hence the creation essentially of ISIS.
President Obama.
He is the founder.
Founder.
He's the founder of ISIS.
You said the president was the founder of ISIS. I know what you meant. You meant that he created the vacuum, he lost the peace.
No, I meant he's the founder of ISIS.
So I said, the founder of ISIS. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. But not that sarcastic.
Yeah. It's so sad. He's taken every possible position on Iraq. I mean, we shouldn't go in. Oh, it was a tremendous military success, let me just tell you. You know how you get out? You get out. That's how you get out. You declare victory and you get out. Yeah, you know, oh, we shouldn't have gotten out. We should have left residual forces of 20,000 troops or 30,000 troops. Just back and forth. And now his position is, well, perhaps we shouldn't have gone in the first place. Perhaps. Not definitely. Perhaps we shouldn't have gone in the first place. But once we went in, oh, you never, ever leave. I would have never, ever left. All right, then what do you want to do? You want to stay there forever? Is that what you want to do? And look, you say, well, come on, Kyle, nobody supports that. Except Lindsey Graham literally said that. He said, you don't leave. He was asked. He goes, you don't leave. You don't leave. You know, you just stay there. That's what you do. You know, it's not like we could be using those resources here at home. I don't know. It's not like our infrastructure gets a grade of D+. It's not like we don't have clean water in Flint, Michigan. It's not like 50% of the country doesn't make $30,000 a year or less. It's not like over 70% of the country isn't living paycheck to paycheck. We have all these problems here at home, and $7 trillion was wasted in Iraq, and now we have Trump, who pretended half the time to be non-interventionist, saying, well, you don't leave, you don't leave. And as we've covered already, they're looking to increase troop levels in Afghanistan. By the way, we've been there even longer than Iraq. We've been there since 2001. What is victory there? They don't even tell you what the idea of victory is. They just say, we need more troops. For what? Well, we got to fight the Taliban. We don't want them taking over again. But whenever we leave, they're going to take over. Whenever we leave. So whether it's now or 100 years from now. So do you just want to stay there forever too? And if they're being honest, they say yes. He also put or wants 1,000 more troops in Syria, boots on the ground. So the guy who half the time made the argument that he's non-interventionist, now that it's his military, he goes, tremendous, believe me. No, let's send him everywhere because I will defeat him. I will defeat ISIS. What does that even mean? How are you going to defeat him? That ideology, Salafism, is not only alive and well, it's spread out through a variety of places. Do you want to invade everywhere where there might be a Salafist? Well, look, there are some in Europe, so what do you want to do? But also, we are feeding that ideology because the person who's exporting it the most, or the country that's exporting it the most, is one of our top allies, Saudi Arabia. We give them billions of dollars, we give them weapons, and we sit on the sidelines as they fund jihadists in Syria and as they fund jihadists in Yemen. So we have an ideological alliance with radical Islam, as this guy pretends like he's I'm strong man against radical Islam. No, and the thing is, and I've said this about Hillary Clinton too, and I think it's true in both cases, you have to you only like them because of how they make you feel. If you're a big-time follower of Hillary or Trump, because it can't be about policy. Because as you just saw, he's been on every side of virtually every policy. I just gave you the example of Iraq. But it happened with all the other issues, too. Virtually all the other issues. He's been on every side of it. You know, and you say, no, there's somewhere he's consistent, like TPP. Well, actually, he wrote an article, I think it was in 2010 or 2011. We covered the story a while ago, where he was big-time in favor of free trade. Saying, yeah, we need to get rid of all the tariffs. That's what we need to do. We need to make sure that, you know, we have a free flow of business over the borders, and wouldn't that be great? It was the exact opposite position. So virtually every issue, he's been on both sides. So that means if you're a big-time defender of him, it can't be because of policy, because he doesn't even really know what policies he's in favor of. So that means you just like how he makes you feel. You like, you know, how he emotes, how he speaks, how he comes across as a straight shooter, even though he's not one. And that's really pathetic. I mean, politics isn't for you if that's how you view, you know, how you gauge whether or not you like a politician. It's got to be about the issues, because the issues are what affect people's lives. And if you're being duped over by a charlatan, a con man here, scam artist, which is clear that he is, well, again, politics isn't for you. So there you have it. He's been on 93 sides of the same goddamn issue. And there it is in video evidence. I don't know, like, if people still defend him after looking at that, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, what does that mean? You just say, I don't believe in contradictions. It's irrelevant. I don't care. What? He did the same thing with Libya, too. Libya, Ted Cruz, of all people, called him out in one of the debates and said, you were supported intervention in Libya, and you wanted to topple Gaddafi. He's like, Libya? I never spoke about Libya. I never supported that, and I never did. Cut to the tape of Trump in 2011 in his office, or before that, I don't know, it was around then, where he's saying, we got to go in there and take out Gaddafi. We got to do it. He just lies. Yeah, no, I never spoke about it, and I was never for intervention, because he would hit Hillary over that, and Ted Cruz was like, you supported it. He did support it. But no, I didn't support it. And then he would, in subsequent interviews, he'd say, no, Libya, when did I say that? He would say that straight to the face of a reporter. The reporter's like, you support Libya. He's like, Libya? I never supported Libya. And the guy's like, well, you actually said, quote, and he reads through it. And Trump still tries to bullshit his way out of it when he's caught fucking red-handed. So stop defending that which is indefensible. And here we have another example of it. One of the things he said on the campaign trail repeatedly was, we should have never done Iraq. Iraq was terrible. Let's spend that money here at home. You know, we shouldn't be wasting our resources overseas. And now he says, perhaps we shouldn't have invaded, but now I would never, ever leave. That's a totally different position. So what I think his followers do is they listen to everything he says. They write off, they disregard the things where they disagree with him. And they say the thing that he really believes is the thing where he agrees with me. That's what they do. That's the only explanation, you know, is that they go, when he says something they don't like, they just go, yeah, whatever, he's just trying to appease the other people. You know, like, oh, the other people who would disagree with me on this issue, he's trying to get them to vote for him. But what he really believes is that thing that I, you know, I believe. And that's what he's going to fight for. No, that's not the case. And stop looking at him in the best possible light with the best possible interpretation. He's a fucking buffoon, and he's been on virtually every side of every issue. Let me take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to get into Tommy Lahren of The Blaze. I got a lot to say about that. And Mike Pence gets an award for women.
What?
All right, stay right there, guys.
Let me die.
death you with the left, the left. You will fake so one bone death you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left.
All right, we're back, y'all. All right, let's go to Tommy Lahren. Tommy Lahren, the right-wing TV host on Glenn Beck's The Blaze Network, has been suspended by Beck. So here's what happened. She basically came out as pro-choice on The View, and then there was backlash in conservative circles as a result of that. So first, let's look at her comments on the issue of abortion from a few months ago, and then you're going to see what she said this week on The View. It's a little bit different, and then we'll come back and discuss the fallout.
The pro-choicers are supposed to be about rare and safe abortions. That's how they avoided sounding like straight-up baby killers, by acknowledging abortion is not a positive thing and a difficult choice. Then we have Lena freaking Dunham out there wishing she could have murdered a fetus, wishing for the option to kill your child. Doesn't exactly say much about the cause, her character, or the pro-choice movement.
Now, I'm pro-choice, and here's why. I am a constitutional, you know, someone that loves the Constitution. I am someone that's for limited government, and so I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and say I'm for limited government, but I think that the government should decide what women do with their bodies. I can sit here and say that as a Republican, and I can say, you know what, I'm for limited government, so stay out of my guns, and you can stay out of my body as well.
Yeah. So that was an awesome flip-flop on her part. She went from calling it baby killing and murder to, and that was a few months ago, to now saying, yeah, you know, I'm pro-choice. So, but overall, on the substance, well, I agree with her now. I mean, I've actually said repeatedly, as everybody who listens to the show knows, that I view myself as a moderate on the issue of abortion. So what that means is, you know, you should be, it should be 100% woman's choice, no question, up until basically the nervous system in the fetus is developed, and then after that, I'm fine with states regulating accordingly. So I say after the nervous system is developed, which is later on, about 23 weeks or so, then, you know, you only allow it in cases of rape and incest, and if the life of the mother is in danger, or if there's a fatal defect in the fetus and the fetus won't make it either way. So I have a fairly moderate position on abortion. But, yeah, the rhetoric of being pro-choice, I think that's more – that's correct, because the reality is when a lot of these people in the anti-abortion movement, they're upfront about it. And they say, no, the second you're done having sex, there's a third person in the room, and an embryo is the same as a, you know, born and fully functioning baby, and a zygote and a gamete is the same fucking thing. And we're going to make no distinction whatsoever, and you're committing murder if you do, even in the earliest stages, if you have an abortion or take the morning after pill, which isn't even abortion, yeah, that's murder. So I think that's 100% incorrect, and I think the pro-choice movement is more correct, even though my position is fairly moderate. I think Roe versus Wade is exactly correct. But so, yeah, I agree with her now, but it's clear that she was either pandering to the pro-life movement or she actually believed that, and for, you know, career reasons, now she's deciding, well, let me appear more moderate and maybe get a job somewhere else, because her contract is up with The Blaze fairly soon. But now let's take a second here to watch Glenn Beck's response, because the very next day on his radio show, he didn't hide it at all. He opened the show with it. He started talking immediately about Tommy Lahren and his take on it, and there's a little bit of even though he tries to mask it a little bit, you can tell there's some a little bit of anger in the undertones here. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss that.
Hello, America. There are two things to discuss on this Tommy Lahren dust-up with The View, and one of them is her employment at The Blaze. The other is the constitutionality or the constitutional argument for conservatives on pro-life. And let's start there. First of all,
We have a whole bunch of different kinds of people that work here. We started The Blaze with a show called The Real News. Real News was absolutely fantastic, and it was hosted by Amy Holmes, who was openly pro-choice. So if you're pro-choice, you can have a job at The Blaze. I don't hire people who are sycophants or who have my opinion. I try to hire people who have a different opinion because I believe in being intellectually rigorous. I don't want straw men. I want people to make a real argument on the other side. So I would disagree that you're a hypocrite if you want limited government and yet you want the government to protect life of the unborn. It's very, very clear. But it takes intellectual honesty, and it takes a willingness to actually think these things through and to do more than just read Twitter or Facebook to get your news and your political opinions. You actually have to study these things out in your mind, especially at a time period like today. Bomb throwing is bomb throwing in today's world is dangerous. Freedom of speech, it's not free. Speech isn't free. It comes with a very high price tag. First, being intellectually honest and intellectually curious. Speech is not free. It comes with another cost, and usually to the other people at the other end of your argument. The pen is mightier than the sword, and it can destroy people. If your aim is clicks, views, and ratings.
Okay, there's a lot to say about that. So he's basically going after Tommy Lahren for saying, look at you, trying to get clicks, views, and ratings. Well, number one, isn't that why you hired her? And number two, isn't that what you do as well? And then I love the random pot shot of like, well, you know, if you don't get your news from Facebook and Twitter, and so like he's going after Tommy, basically saying you don't research the right way. Glenn, you do. This guy is a far right jackoff who's been getting all of his news and information probably from his own shitty site, The Blaze, but Daily Caller and WorldNet Daily. I mean, the kinds of theories that Glenn Beck has pushed over the years. He was fucking sued because he said the person who did the Boston bombing was somebody who it wasn't, and then he stuck to his guns after. You are in no position to lecture fucking anybody about research or standards. And then, again, Glenn fucking Beck, lecturing somebody else about how bomb throwing is dangerous. You're Glenn Beck. You got fired from motherfucking Fox News because you were bomb throwing. And you came up with these kooky, totally made-up plots about how the communists and the Muslim Brotherhood have infiltrated the White House and Obama's a racist against white people. And So it's just hilarious that he's, like, lecturing Tommy as if he's, like, this moral authority. Now, okay, let's get to the substance of it. Should she have been suspended? Well, first of all, let's get into why I actually think she was suspended. So does it have anything to do with the abortion comment? Yes, it has something to do with it. It's not the whole picture, but here's what I think. So yes, they're mad about her being pro-choice, regardless of what they say there, how they pretend like that's not the case. They're mad at her being pro-choice. But it was more that she mentioned that, and they viewed it as an opportunity to do something, and he viewed it as an opportunity to do something that he wanted to do for a while, which is take her down a few pegs. And he saw this as an opportunity because it is true that on right-wing Twitter, they all blew up and they were against her because this is one of the things where they think it's not debatable, and it's like she came out as pro-murder, basically, in their minds. So he saw the anger against her, and he viewed it as, okay, now I have an opportunity to knock her down a few pegs. So yes, it has something to do with the abortion comments. But the real reason is it's twofold. One of them is Beck is jealous. Look, Beck was on top of the world at one point when he was on Fox News. When he was coming up with his most odious conspiracy theories, he was on the cover of fucking important magazines, and he was well-known. He got super famous in a short amount of time, and he kind of rode that Tea Party wave when he was doing his show, and he was the darling of the right. And he's the kind of guy who feeds off of fame and fawning adoration. And he's really one of the worst in that respect, because, like, I've listened to his show before. He does, like, no prep. He portrays it like he's this intellectual. He doesn't even read news stories and talk about them. Like, here, when I do my show, I read news stories and then talk to you guys about it and give you some facts and information and then give you my opinion. He skips all the work part and just gives opinion. So all he wants is love, attention. And he was on top of the world. Now he's no longer on top of the world. He started the Blaze. And now he's a nobody in conservative circles because he came out big time against Trump. He kind of hitched his wagon to the Ted Cruz on the Ted Cruz side, and Ted Cruz was an epic failure, and he's even more dislikable than Donald Trump. And he's like openly anti-Trump. So he lost like half of his audience or more when that happened. I'm not kidding. And then he went through this identity crisis where now he's pretending like, oh, I'm going to be the anti-Trump conservative, but at times I'm just going to sound like liberal. And at one point he came out in this weird, almost pro-Black Lives Matter thing, which is a total no-no in conservative circles. So, and he went to like establishment liberal media outlets like the New York Times and had these pieces written about him to like revive him and to make him seem like the reasonable conservative in the Trump era. And like he has this identity crisis where he used to be the darling of the right. Now he's no longer the darling of the right. He doesn't even know who he really is. And all the while that's happening, Tommy Lahren exploded in popularity. Look, man, everybody knows, not only do I not like her, I kind of despise her. Like, I've sniped at her on Twitter a bunch of times. I think she's a ridiculous human being who's, you know, in this position because she's articulate and she's attractive, but her ideas are odious and just factually wrong across the board. Like, I've broken down some of her final thoughts or whatever the fuck they're called. And she just says shit that's just not true and says it over and over and says it in this way as if, like, let me tell you, I'm going to break it down here. It's like, okay, pipe down. Like, you're just wrong. You say a lot of shit that's wrong. But you can't deny that her numbers are ridiculous. Like, on Facebook, millions upon millions upon millions of views. I mean, how many dudes in the right-wing circles are like, hey, Tommy Lahren, I just salivated on myself. Oh, is that saliva or some other bodily fluid? So they love her. And millions upon millions of views on Facebook. All the while, Glenn Beck's going in the opposite direction, and nobody on the right gives a fuck about him anymore. He's an afterthought. So Beck is jealous, and he wants to take her down a few pegs. And this is how he's doing it. But then there's a third reason, too. I told you it was, yes, a little bit about the abortion comment, but then most importantly, it was that he's jealous. But the third thing is, they're in huge financial trouble, the Blaze. Huge financial trouble. In fact, we've done like two or three different stories on it, and the financial troubles go back years now. And so it used to be the case that they got their money from various advertisers. Well, the advertisers jumped ship because there were this backlash, especially when the Limbaugh thing landed, when Limbaugh went after Sandra Fluke, I think her name is, yeah, and called her a whore for taking birth control, basically. Well, the mainstream advertisers said, no more conservative radio. I don't know why that was the one thing, because they've been spewing odious nonsense for years, pro-torture, pro-Iraq war, which is an illegal invasion. That didn't affect the advertisers. For whatever reason, the Sandra Fluke thing blew up, and they said, no more right-wing talk radio. So they lost their traditional advertisers. Then they went to the shitty advertisers, fucking, you know, survival kits and shit like that. And that's who Glenn Beck has mostly, advertiser-wise, been making money off of. But then they start losing those people. So then they're just propped up by right-wing think tanks. People don't know this, but there's a lot of right-wing think tanks. You know, whether it's Heritage Foundation or Cato Institute. I don't know if Cato is really involved with these guys because they're more libertarian than anything else. But there's a bunch of right-wing think tanks like Heritage that basically treat these guys as welfare queens. So they don't do well in the ratings. Rush Limbaugh hasn't done well in the ratings since, like, the 1990s, okay? Glenn Beck's TV network, The Blaze, nobody fucking watches. So they're not making it in the free market. How are they still on the air? Right-wing think tanks, which are funded by billionaires, basically, Koch brothers, people like that, big money donors, right-wing think tanks funded by them, they give money to these networks so that they can push their propaganda. But, you know, after a while, they realize this is a shitty investment because we're not really getting anything out of it. They're just an endless money pit, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and people like that. So the second that they decide to cut off the flow of funds, the second the right-wing think tanks say, we're done with you, his business is going to fold up like that. And they're already massive, massive debt. You know, they had to close down some studios they had in some places. So Tommy Lahren is their number one person at the Blaze, but he's jealous, and they find they can unload costs a little bit by saying, okay, we're going to suspend you. They say it's at least a week suspension, but her thing is up in September anyway, her contract. So here's the position he's in. Beck is fucked because Tommy Lahren is almost certainly not going to stay with the Blaze, and she's going to move on to make bank. And that may have been kind of what she was doing here with these comments on abortion, because she may have been even, you know, basically kind of interviewing for The View. She was on The View. And the idea was like, okay, let me – if I play the conservative, but I'm not going to be crazy, I'll be a little more reasonable, and I'll say, oh, actually, I'm pro-choice. Then all of a sudden, you go from being this extremist, super far-right, like, idiot, keep it real, to being like, oh, look, she's somewhat moderate because she – on one fucking issue, she's on a side that makes sense. So it could be that, or she could be, you know, aiming for whatever, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, whatever. There's a million – she can make bank because she now has a brand, and she wants to moderate it out a little bit to get into a little bit more mainstream circles, because Beck is really the fringe of the fringe. So that's what I think is going on there. Yes, they're mad about the abortion comments, but more importantly, Beck is jealous, and they're also in huge financial trouble. Glenn, it was too late. You can't, like, here's the thing. So what would I have done? Well, I would have never hired her in the first place because I want to hire people who know what the fuck they're talking about, and she makes shit up all the time. And she said a million other things which were way more egregious than this. So I would have never hired her in the first place, but after you hire her and you set up your little right-wing propaganda outlet, would I let her go for this? No, of course not. But that's the thing. It's really not about that. It's about all those other factors, too, that play a role. So, Glenn, it's too late, though. She's already a giant star. She's already bigger than you now. So no matter what you try to do here to, I don't know, put the cat back in the bag, that's not going to happen. You're not going to make her less famous now all of a sudden by doing this, and you're not going to prevent her from moving on to a brighter future. So Beck in his classic pettiness, trying to take her down a few pegs. And it's going to backfire, and so in a weird way, I'm actually on Tommy Lahren's side. That felt gross to say. Okay, next. Vice President Mike Pence is getting the Working for Women Award. And this is from a group called the Independent Women's Forum. It's hilarious. He's really getting an award for women. So what I want to do here is take a minute and look at his record on women's issues. If you're getting an award for women, then we might want to do that. So first of all, he's completely against abortion. He, in fact, pushed a bill that bans abortion for disabled fetuses. He pushed a bill that requires women who've had abortions or miscarriages to have a burial or cremation. That's as extreme as it gets. He was governor of the state that sentenced Purvi Patel to 20 years in prison for what she says is a stillbirth. Damn, really? 20 years in prison for somebody who had a stillbirth? Wow. In 2011, he led the fight to shut down the government over funding for Planned Parenthood. He literally wanted to shut the government because they wanted to fund Planned Parenthood, which, again, 97% of the funding does not go to abortion. And actually, excuse me, 97% of what Planned Parenthood does has nothing to do with abortion. All of the funding has nothing, it doesn't go to abortion, all of it, because there's the Hyde Amendment, which says no federal funds can go towards abortion. So basically what you're doing is saying birth control, cancer screenings, things of that nature, we want to defund Planned Parenthood completely. So we, and I will shut down the government over that. Again, that's as extreme as it gets. As governor, he cut $1 million from domestic violence programs, wow, and slashed higher education funding while cutting corporate taxes. So big multinational corporations, love you. Let me give you a big wet smooch. But domestic violence programs, wow, we need small government in that area. Come on now. He cut $1 million from, are you kidding me? $1 million from domestic violence programs, and he's getting a woman's award. That's like giving Dick Cheney an award for his philanthropy for Iraqi civilians. Like, wait, no, he's responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of them. How are you going to give him an award like that? And finally, he cut needle exchange programs to provide clean needles to drug addicts. And he worked to shut down clinics where people could get free HIV/AIDS testing. And the result was, I hope you're sitting, an HIV outbreak, which he ignored for 2 months before being forced to act. So he cut the clean needle program, you know, tried to shut down HIV/AIDS testing, and then there was an HIV outbreak. I wonder how many women were affected by this. Yeah, Mike Pence is a scumbag. And I haven't even gotten into other aspects. I mean, we could talk about, if we really wanted to get into it, foreign policy. He's as hawkish as it gets for the Iraq war. You know, you name it. How many women were killed in that, big guy? I support women by having the civilians, female civilians in Iraq being massacred. His economic policies, virtually across the board in favor of outsourcing, pro-TPP. So in every respect, he's a disaster. But to give him an award for women is like another level of stupid. But I save the ace in the hole here for the final fact. The reason why he's getting the Working for Women Award from the Independent Women's Forum, Kellyanne Conway's on the board. There you go. So this is the way politics works in America. This is the way politics works probably everywhere, or in most places. It's just like, you know, who do you know? You have people in positions of power. They'll twist some arms. You know, oh, you have the title of vice president. Well, now pretend everything about you is just lovely. He has one of the worst record on women, and he's getting an award for women. It's like Jeff Sessions giving an award to him on women. Jeff Sessions voted against the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. And their reasoning was, I'm not kidding, that, well, I mean, look, we're in favor of the bill, but now the bill applies to gays. And now you want it to apply to Native Americans? Ugh. I mean, I'm all for protecting women, but not the LGBTQs and not the Native Americans. Gross. Unbelievable what these people are. But there you have it. Mike Pence getting a women's award. We live in the fucking Twilight Zone. Okay. C-SPAN time. When was the last time you were excited over that? Who's ever said that? And people have been like, yep, I'm on board. I can't wait for that. According to a new C-SPAN poll, 57% of likely U.S. voters can't name a single Supreme Court justice. 57%, the overwhelming majority of the American people, the overwhelming majority of likely voters, which is even worse because they're the more informed ones, can't name a single Supreme Court justice. Yeah, this gets me mad. So I'm mad at everybody for this. I'm mad at, honestly, part of it is, yes, personal responsibility. Like, you're a citizen of the United States of America, and you can't name a single Supreme Court justice, not one. 57%. That's inexcusable. Like, you gotta, that's incumbent upon you to learn something about it. Google that shit, son. Like, that's just gross. So, yes, personal responsibility is an angle here. But I'm also mad at the media, because the media, mainstream media, all they do is cover nonsense, man. Like, I had on local news the other night because I was watching something before it, and then the local news came on, And it was like, oh my God, what the fuck? They were like citing TMZ as a source for some shit. Like, it was a story about the Real Housewives of something or other, and the son did something and got into a car accident and killed somebody or what. Who cares? I'm not saying that's not a news story at all, but they spent fucking 3 minutes on it in a 30-minute show talking about the son of somebody who's like a D-list celebrity who maybe did something. What the fuck? What the fuck? And, okay, but you say that's more local. So I was like, I think like a state news thing or whatever. Like, I don't know. I still don't think it's okay. That's, and then you turn on MSNBC and CNN and Fox News, and they're worse. Fox News is the propaganda arm for the Republican Party. MSNBC is the propaganda arm for the Democratic Party. And let's be clear, that's very different from a conservative network or a liberal slash progressive network. If it was just a conservative network or a liberal or progressive network, not only am I okay with that, I actually think it's great because it's ideological. It's just people with a perspective who talk about things that are important. So it's like Ron Paul, like, okay, he has his own network. I don't agree with him on everything, but okay, it's cool that he has his network, and we do what we do here. It's like a liberal, progressive view of stuff. I give you facts, and then I give you my take on it. That's cool, too. But these are the fucking party hack networks. It's all about the party, party loyalty, Republican Party, Democratic Party. They're always right on Fox News or MSNBC, respectively, for, you know, Fox News, Republican, MSNBC, Democrat. But, and then CNN, neutrality bias all day long, establishment bias all day long, it's sensationalism bias in all of these networks, squeaky wheel gets the grease. They're talking about things that Donald Trump's tweets or this or that or somebody cursed and isn't that unpresidential and Russia, 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 Russia. And it's all the real news. How much time has been spent on any of these networks covering the near famine in Yemen with like 14 million people on the verge of starvation? About 7 million people who are literally one step below outright famine. You know, thousands of people being bombed to smithereens because we're arming Saudi Arabia and they're killing massive numbers of civilians and bombing hospitals and schools. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about that in mainstream media. Those are the real scandals. How many of them are talking about the real scandal with Trump where he fired a U.S. attorney because the U.S. attorney was looking into an obviously corrupt Health and Human Services secretary that he picked? The guy invested $300,000 into health stocks and then proposed bills to bump up those stock prices. That's insane corruption. Are they talking about that? No, they're not talking about that. So you got to teach people. The media is such a joke. The media, why? If you did your job well and covered Supreme Court decisions, for example, the right way, you would hammer home the different, you know, people, the different justices. How many times would you have said fucking Clarence Thomas? How many times would you have said Ruth Bader Ginsburg? How many times would you have said Sonia Sotomayor or Elena Kagan or Stephen Breyer? But they don't talk about it. You would think, hey, maybe a good thing to discuss would be the life story of one of these people on the Supreme Court and maybe dig into their record and do a special on that. No. No. Can't fucking name it. 57%. So I'm mad at the media as well. But then also, I'm mad at the education system because that is – we don't teach civics anymore, man. We don't teach, like, government class. Hey, here's how the system works. Here are the three branches of government. Here's how checks and balances works. Here's the Senate. Here's the House of Representatives. Here's what goes on there. We keep students in the dark about how our government works. And it's at the point now where, that's a crisis, that 57% of people can't name a single justice on the Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court arguably has more effect on your life than the fucking president. It's at least as much of an effect as the president. So I'm just upset about this. My only solace here is that the right word, solace? I think it's good enough. Is that I think in my audience, it would be many, many, many more people who can name a fucking Supreme Court justice. In fact, I think it's over 80% in my audience that could do that, which means you guys are a lot more, you know, versed on this stuff and a lot more knowledgeable than many people. And let me also be clear about something else here. This doesn't mean, like Bill Maher, who on many issues I agree with him, but sometimes I just vehemently disagree with him. But, like, he would look at this and say, the American people are stupid. That would be his conclusion. They're stupid. They're stupid. And my response to that is, no, Bill, they're not stupid. You can say they're ignorant. They're ignorant when it comes to historical facts, for example. And that's a problem, and we need to fix that. Don't get me wrong. But there's a difference between stupid and ignorant. Ignorant is you just haven't been given the knowledge and don't know the information. But once you're given it, you got it. So I think they're more ignorant than stupid. And, in fact, I would argue they're not stupid at all, because when you look at the opinion polls on how they feel about the way the country should be run, even though they can't name a Supreme Court justice, which sucks and upsets me, they're generally right in their gut instinct, and they're not masochists, and they don't want to, like, hurt their neighbor. Like, a majority want single-payer health care, a majority want to raise the minimum wage, a majority want free college, a majority want to end these stupid wars, a majority want to get money out of politics. So they're not stupid by any stretch of the imagination. They're actually very smart. But it's just, you know, they've been kept in the dark by the education system and the media, and they're not interested enough to learn about the Supreme Court and get the specific facts and the names and stuff like that. So they're ignorant, which is inexcusable, but they're not stupid, and we should make that distinction because it's a very important one. All right, next. Actually, take a little sippy sip sip. You know what's happening? I am not taking a break right now. How do you like that? I think you like it. That's what I think. All right. Here we go. Probably my favorite story of the day. The UN's World Happiness Report is out for 2017. They've done this every year since 2012. And what they do is this very complex analysis. They actually ask people, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you? I'm obviously joking. It's not complex at all. It's the most simple thing in the world. But one can make the argument, and it's a fairly persuasive argument, this might be the best measure of happiness. Because what is happiness but subjective? You know? Oh, are you happy? No. Well, actually, I've measured, and you're objectively happy. Wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. So in a weird way, even though this is a subjective happiness report, it's kind of as objective as a happiness report can be. Because they're just asking people, hey, scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you? So, let me give you the results, because this is something. Now, first I want to give you the least happy countries. So you have Yemen, unsurprising. There's a near famine going on there, and there's a war going on, which isn't even really a war. It's just Saudi Arabia massacring civilians. Yemen's one of the most unhappy. South Sudan, for obvious reasons. Liberia, Guinea, Togo, Rwanda, Syria, giant civil war going on there. Tanzania, Burundi, and the Central African Republic. Well, most of those. So when you look at that, what you see is either very, very poor nations, nations that are lacking resources, nations that don't have a really stable, organized system of government, or famine, or war. So for very clear reasons, you can see why these are unhappy. So again, this gets back to my main point of, even though it's technically a subjective happiness report, it's almost as objective as a report can be on this front. Those are the ones that are the least happy. You ready for the happiest? Let's go from number 10 to number 1. We have Sweden, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the Netherlands, Finland, Switzerland, Iceland, Denmark, and Norway. Notice anything about them? First of all, the overwhelming majority of them are the Scandinavian countries, the Nordic countries, which I don't know, we talk about on this show maybe more than anybody else talks about them on the planet. I mean, we bring it up like every day. Scandinavian countries, Scandinavian countries, Scandinavian countries, Scandinavian countries. Now, why do I do it? Well, now you see why I do it. Because you ask them and they say, yeah, my quality of life is awesome. I love it. They're dominating the top 10, man. What, the top 5 is like all them. And by the way, this happens virtually every year. In fact, they say it in the piece. The piece I read on this was on BBC. And they said, yeah, the Scandinavian region dominated, like, every year so far. And Denmark, specifically, was always the top, either number one or top three. You know, it turns out social democracy is wildly popular. Wildly popular. By the way, the U.S., I think, was number 13 or 14, thereabouts. What you have here, what do all these countries have in common, even the ones that aren't the Scandinavian countries? Well, one thing is universal health care, single-payer health care. You know, weird. It turns out when you take health care off the table as something people have to fucking worry about, that in the U.S. they might die because they don't have access to basic care, or they might go bankrupt because they need a common surgery. But when you take that off the table, turns out people are happier. Strange. Not going bankrupt for medical bills tends to make people happier. So they all have universal health care. A lot of these countries either have, it's either a high minimum wage, so like Australia, about $18 an hour, or many of these have, it's not even a minimum wage issue, it's a union issue where they have strong unions where they don't even need a minimum wage because they collectively bargain for all the wages. So people, nobody even makes what would have been a minimum wage. So it turns out when you have a middle class that's healthy and wealthy, you have a happy country. Material well-being tends to affect your well-being. Radical, I know. So radical. So these are countries that have a strong middle class. You know what else they have? Either free college or super-duper reduced cost college. All these nations. Another shocker. Wow. When you're not going bankrupt because of fucking student loans and paying them into your goddamn 60s or 70s. And by the way, you can't go bankrupt on student loans. You have to pay it, period. It's a special kind of debt where they say, nope, you got to pay every single fucking penny, no reduce, nothing, no bankruptcy, period. So it turns out when you treat people right and you say, hey, maybe education is something civilized countries take off the table and you get that simply by being born because it gives you equal opportunity and it's investment in the future, turns out people are really fucking happy. So you have strong wages, and the other thing is vacation time. All these nations, paid vacation time by law, paid family leave by law. Did you know the U.S. is one of three nations that doesn't have paid maternity leave by law? One of three nations in the entire world. So that means even like Iran has the paid maternity leave by law, all these other countries. Now that's, by the way, that's not to say they're good on women's issues on other fronts. Of course they're not. But every nation except three has paid maternity leave by law. And on that list is the United States, Papua New Guinea, and Oman. Those are the only three that don't have paid maternity leave. So all these nations paid family leave and paid vacation time by law. The U.S. has zero paid vacation days by law. All these countries have multiple weeks, if not over a month in some cases. So, free health care, free college, high wages for the middle class, a vibrant middle class. They look out for poor people. Paid vacation time, paid family leave. It turns out when you give people just the basics, and that's what that is, let's be honest, that's just the basics in life. Like you need some time off from work, you know, be a human, live, fucking enjoy yourself a little bit, not just always slave away in a factory for your employer who's your fucking overlord. So some time off, some health care, education, good wages, and people go, you know what, I'm pretty fucking happy. I'm pretty fucking happy. And these are social democracies. So in other words, it's a healthy mix of socialism and capitalism. And you regulate the capitalism to make sure there's no abuses. And you have a rising standard of living and everybody's fucking happy. So, I fucking told you, it's not that difficult, man. Like, you have the libertarians who are so goofy. Like, where's your precedent? Go ahead, point to me your historical precedent of, this is our ideal system, anarcho-capitalism, and it works great. When did we have that? When did anybody fucking have that? Oh, the Industrial Revolution. What a fucking great time when children would get crushed in machines and die and workers would get black lung because there's no goddamn environmental regulations or health or safety regulations. And everybody had to work and kids were in the factories. And oh, wasn't it great? Because we had a lot of, GDP growth, yes. Growth is not the only fucking economic measure as to the well-being of a country, you morons. So where's your precedent? The Industrial Revolution in the U.S., Somalia, no regulations, total wild, wild west marketplace. They, by the way, they hate it when you bring up Somalia. Like, oh, they mock us for bringing it up. Like we're fucking strawmanning them or something. When, no, that's the kind of system you like. No centralized government and a fucking total free marketplace. There you go. And it's a fucking disaster. So there's no precedent for that. And look, sorry, but people to the left of me, communists, where's your fucking precedent? Where's your precedent? How did it go in those countries? How did it go in communist countries? You know what happened? The government had too much power, and they got too involved on the social front. So in communist countries, it's authoritarian leftism, and you had people who said, oh, sorry, free speech, free expression, a free press? No, not having it. The government's going to control that, and we're going to crack down on you if you dissent from us. Now, you, this is where they go, that's not true, communism. I know. It's never true X when it's your ideology run amok. Never. It's not that, hey, maybe that's an inevitable consequence when you try to do communism. No, that is what it is. It's like when people say, when ISIS does a terror attack, that's not true, Islam. Well, yeah, to many people, it's not, but to them, it is Islam, and they're acting in accordance with it. So you can't just disregard the bad ones. You can't just say, oh, that country was communist, but it doesn't count as communist. Well, sure, that guy who did a terrorist attack was Muslim, but he doesn't count as Muslim. The fuck is that? You got to own it. You got to own it. And that's not saying all communists are bad people or all Muslims are bad people. Of course not. It's just saying you can't only count the good ones. You can't only count the bad ones, but you can't only count the good ones. But look, it turns out with communism, what happens? Well, Soviet Union, how did that work out? It was a failed experiment. People, oh, no, the outside factors. You're incorrect. That's not true. So if communism fails, if obviously, I mean, I don't even need to get into, like, fascism with fucking Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. Won't even touch that one because it's just so obvious it's a disgusting failure for a variety of reasons. And if anarcho-capitalism doesn't work, what do we have left? Let me fucking think about it. Social democracy, mix of socialism and capitalism, a healthy mix. Some things are free market but regulated. Other things are, yes, the government socialist. But furthermore, what you have, on top of all the other great things I mentioned, free healthcare, free college, paid vacation time, good wages, they have social freedoms in many of these countries. So what that means is there's no authoritarian angle here. You know, some of these countries are much more lax with drugs and as it should be, and women's rights, make your own decision. So that's the key, man. You need total social freedom. So no overarching, overreaching government in your private life with social decisions. So no authoritarianism, libertarianism instead of authoritarianism on social issues. And on economic issues, you just need that baseline. You just need equal opportunity, you know. And the results are it fucking works. And this is why I'm always amazed. I feel like we're the only – we're not. Calm down, Kyle. It feels at times like we're the only like outlet that just argues for social democracy and calls it by its name and is very specific about, hey, here's what we want. But it should be the case that everybody fucking argues for it, because when it comes to the objective, this is empirical evidence. This is, hey, here's a report which does it in the most clear way, where I don't know of a better metric than just asking people, hey, are you happy? Here's a clear report that says, hey, maybe those systems are the best. And this should constitute evidence to all of us that that's the direction our country needs to go. I want to have free healthcare. I want to have free college. I want to end these stupid wars. I want to increase your social freedoms. You know, I want to have a higher minimum wage. I want to have more unionization. I want to get money out of politics and limit corruption. That's another thing. These countries are some of the least corrupt countries on the planet. They have, in some of them, versions of clean elections. So we have our answers, guys. We have our answers. Now we just got to push for it. We got to fight for it. We got to argue for it. We got to raise consciousness and raise awareness. This is the answer. Social democracy is the future if the future is going to be bright in any way. Okay. Next. I have a story here coming out of Florida that really made an impact on me when I was reading about it last night. So NPR explains here, Prosecutors in Miami-Dade County said they found no evidence of a crime in the death of a prison inmate who was left for 2 hours in a hot shower. 4 years after Darren Rainey died at the Dade Correctional Institute, the state's investigation found that the corrections officers who locked Rainey in the shower committed no crime. Miami-Dade's prosecutor opted not to charge any of the officers, finding that the evidence does not show that Rainey's well-being was grossly disregarded by the correctional staff. The state's medical examiner found that Rainey's death was an accident resulting from his schizophrenia, heart disease, and being confined in the shower. Quote, "It is not substantiated that temperatures inside the shower room were excessively high," she wrote. But the investigation's findings are disputed, as the Associated Press reports. Several witnesses said that Rainey's skin appeared to be peeled back and reddish in spots, with one inmate claiming that Rainey looked like a boiled lobster. Wow. Now, they go on to mention that the nurse at the correctional facility, when she saw him after this incident, she says his body was too hot to even take a temperature. Various witnesses say his skin was melting off. His skin was melting off of his body. So you have direct eyewitness reports from when it happened, unanimous. They say they heard him screaming for help and apologizing for the first hour he was in the shower. And they never unlocked it. They never let him out. He was screaming for an hour. And he was in there for 2 hours total, and he died. His skin was melting off of his body. They basically boiled the guy alive, is what they did. And they say, nope, nothing to see here. No crime. Wait, hold the fuck on. Even if, let's say, and this is being way too kind, and I don't believe this for a second, but let's be super kind to them for a second and say, it was a total accident. Okay, how does an accident like that even happen? The guy screaming for an hour, nobody heard him? Nobody heard him and nobody opened the door? So I don't believe that for a second. But if, oh my God, it was a total accident and they were all asleep and they were all in the other room where they couldn't hear his screams and blah, 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 blah. Even then, isn't it a crime? Because it's negligence. The guy died as a result of your negligence. You weren't paying attention. You weren't doing your job. You weren't monitoring the inmates. You left him in a boiling hot shower for 2 hours and he died. And even if you say it wasn't because of the shower he died, it was what happened that the shower triggered in him with the heart issue, blah, 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 blah. Still negligence. No matter how you slice it or dice it, negligence through and through. So whether we're talking about a lower classification of manslaughter or we're talking about murder, you can argue as to what the charge can and should be based on the facts. But here's what can't be argued, that there was no wrongdoing. There was obviously wrongdoing, intentional or not intentional. I mean, this is a slap in the face. You want to talk about a conspiracy? Here's a conspiracy. This is a conspiracy of the prison guards to cover their own fucking ass, and they got people in the government to cover their ass for them. Oh, man, this is... They fucking killed this poor guy. Hey, by the way, you ready for why he was in there? Who cares? The guy's a murderer. He had what was coming to him. He was serving 2 years for a cocaine charge. He's a nonviolent drug offender. He was boiled alive in the shower. They say the temperature was between 160 degrees and 180 degrees. His skin melted off his body, and he died. They knew about it. Of course they knew about it. They literally controlled the temperature in the shower from outside. There's a room outside where they control the temperature of the shower, like a control room. So let me get this straight. He was screaming for the first hour, but somehow you didn't hear him when you turned on the controls? That makes absolutely no sense. What, you turn it on and leave, and everybody else managed to hear him screaming. And you say, no, the hot water, it wasn't even an issue. There's no evidence of excessively high temperature in the water. The fucking nurse said that it was too hot to even take the temperature, and his skin was melting off his body. That happened right at the time. They're just lying. Look, there needs to be hell to pay. Fire fucking everybody. I'd fire everybody. If they're not going to prosecute here, first of all, the federal government needs to get involved. You have to. There's got to be special prosecutor because there's obviously foul play going on and people know people and, okay, I'm going to cut a deal and you're going to get out with this and even though you committed murder or manslaughter, it's fine. Federal government needs to get involved. But you got to fucking fire everybody too because these are cold-blooded killers. Well, cold-blooded, it's hot-blooded is the right word for it. But unbelievable, man. This is 2017 in the United States of America. We have a person in – he shouldn't even be in jail. He shouldn't be in prison. For a nonviolent drug charge, that's not a fucking crime in my book. A nonviolent drug charge. So you didn't hurt anybody or do anything wrong. You just decided to have a substance and tweak your consciousness. Piss off. He shouldn't even been in there in the first place. But he was in there, and then when he was in there, he gets treated like this. Fucking skin melts off. They kill the guy, boil him alive in a hot shower for 2 hours. We didn't do anything wrong. If you're going to be fucking vicious murderers and treat human beings like that, human beings who aren't even bad people, it's just a drug charge, well, then you should be locked up because you're the real criminals. He ain't the real criminal. He's an innocent victim here. You're the real fucking criminals, and you know you are. Okay, now let's continue. I kind of got to hurry up here because I got 3 stories I got to get to. The nonprofit, nonpartisan research center called Child Trends did a study on birth control to find out the effects of increased access all across the country. So what would it be like if all women in the U.S. had access to high-quality birth control? Well, this is incredible. Listen to this. They say, if all American women had the same access to highly effective contraceptives, there would be a 64% drop in unintended pregnancies, a 63% drop in unintended births, a 67% drop in abortions, and a savings of $12 billion a year in public health care costs. Wow. So understand something here, man. And this is a point that I've been making for years on this show. If you are really pro-life, so you're anti-abortion, and you say, look, I don't like it, I don't want it to happen, I want to get rid of it, I want to limit it as much as humanly possible. If that's your position, the first thing on your agenda should be we got to have birth control everywhere. We got to have condoms everywhere. We got to have high quality contraceptives everywhere. We got to have sex education. We got to have all that. We have to. We have to have these family clinics, free clinics. We got to have them. Why? Because the proof is in the pudding. If you do that, if you go down that road, if you do these liberal, progressive policies, I just told you, 67% drop in abortions and a savings of $12 billion a year. So that's another reason if you're a conservative to get behind this. I'm a fiscal conservative. I care about the deficit. I'm a deficit hawk. I'm all about the numbers. That's what I am. Okay, $12 billion a year in public health care costs saved. $12 billion because we decided to invest in free clinics. We decided to invest in greater access to birth control. This isn't a question. This isn't a debate. This isn't a discussion. You can't have it both ways. So in other words, if you're a conservative, you can't say, I'm against abortion, but I am also against the condom. I'm also against the pill. I'm also against contraceptives and free clinics. You can't have it. It's one or the other. Because, again, you will drastically lower the number of abortions and save a shitload of money if you have the free clinics and have the easily available contraceptives. So, look, it's simple, facts are facts, and you got to pick. And obviously everybody, liberals and progressives, and Republicans and conservatives should be on the side of, yeah, have more easily available access to contraceptives, because we all agree, it's not like liberals, I mean, maybe the tiniest, most ridiculous fringe in the world is like pro-abortion, like Lena Dunham. I wish I had one! What the fuck? Like, everybody, every sane person agrees, like, yeah, liberals think you should have the choice, but we're not glorifying it or saying, it's wonderful. Again, a tiny fringe does that. We say, just like the old saying goes, it should be safe, legal, and rare. You know, so like, it's not like we're pro-abortion. We're just in favor of the person having the choice, regulated version of abortion, of course, but the choice. So that's our position on it. So in other words, yeah, anything that lowers that is good by our standards too. And if all you need to do to lower it is to educate people more and to give them access to contraceptives, that's a no-brainer, man. So it's a win-win for everybody. We need more easily available contraceptives, free clinics, and things of that nature, because the results are, you just can't deny these results. 67% drop in abortions and $12 billion a year in savings. It's a win-win. Okay, next. The United Nations Economic and Social Commission, in conjunction with Princeton University, released a report on the state of Israel, and they had some harsh but fair criticisms. So here's their conclusion. Quote, Israel has established an apartheid regime that dominates the Palestinian people as a whole. So most of us would take that and file it under the duh category. But to the United States and to Israel, this was inexcusable and beyond the pale. So as a result of this, the executive secretary of the UN Economic and Social Commission for Western Asia, somebody named Rima Khalif, was fired. She was fired over this report. And actually what happened is she was told to withdraw the report, and she said, no, I'm not going to do that. The findings are factual. And they said, that's nice. We're going to force you to resign now. So this is the United States and Israel sending a message to the UN. You don't criticize Israel anymore. Under Obama, maybe you get the light slap in the wrist, as they did at the end when, you know, they said, we are abstaining from vetoing a resolution. They're not even voting for it. They're abstaining from vetoing a resolution that says Israel should follow international law and stop building settlements. Like, that's the most vanilla, banal, obviously, you know, correct thing is, hey, maybe you should follow international law like everybody else and not fucking build settlements, illegal settlements, on occupied land. And so we allowed that to go through, but there was no teeth attached to it, no forcing them to do anything. It was just, hey, we are declaring. We're just saying, follow international law. Under Obama, at the end, we had that. There were more resolutions critical of Israel under Bush, under other Republican presidents. So the idea that Obama was like anti-Israel is fucking crazy. But now under Trump, they're saying, no, we're going to – nothing. You can't even release a report which is factual, which describes, yes, here are the examples of apartheid. Here's how it functions. In some places, they're separate, around some settlements, there's separate roads for Palestinians and for Israelis. I mean, this is really – and you're going to deny? Well, yeah, sure. We keep building settlements and jacking their land, and everything that we've built – you know, beyond the 1967 borders, is illegal under international law. But nothing to see here. We're not violating international law. There is no occupation, like Naftali Bennett said. I think the education minister, education secretary, whatever the fuck they call it. He was on CNN with Jake Tapper. He's like, occupation? What occupation? What are you talking about? There's no occupation. I don't know what you mean. So this is the trick. You do more settlements, take more territory, do more occupation, apartheid, and you go, I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't know. Liberal values. We have liberal values, so you shut up, unless you're some sort of savage or barbarian. Yes, because it's so liberal to do illegal occupation and to do apartheid and have separate roads. So liberal. Yeah. You treat gays well in your border, within your borders. You treat gays better there than they do in Saudi Arabia. So, oh, you're so great, and that gives you, that allows you to steal more Palestinian land and, you know, shut up if you disagree. Because we're liberal enough to treat gays better than Saudi Arabia. Wow, what a high bar you set for yourself. So now we're allowed to steal Palestinian land. Sick. So anybody who thought, oh, yeah, no, Trump will maybe be good on Israel. Doesn't look like it. Looks like even though he said when he was campaigning, I'm going to be neutral. After there was the backlash where people were like, you can't be neutral. You have to be biased in favor of Israel. He's like, yeah, you're right. I'll do that. And now it's just Netanyahu. You do whatever you want. Whatever you want, and we'll sit in the corner and we'll back you up. Well, then expect there to be no peace in the Middle East as far as the eye can see, because that's one of the biggest things that inflames tension. And finally, last story of the day, and it involves Snoop Dogg. Fox News went after Little Bow Wow and Snoop Dogg, which is an awesome sentence, what I just said there. That's great. Because Snoop Dogg did this music video where he shot a clown version of Donald Trump. So let's see their response here.
In obscure loser news, Bow Wow is back. Bow Wow, previously known as Lil Bow Wow, previously known as washed-up rapper, previously known as washed-up actor, currently known as dumb and desperate, came to Snoop Dogg's defense after Mr. Trump tweeted about Snoop's video in which he mock-shoots the president. Bow Wow, also known as Shad Moss, also known as Tiny Shaft, also known as Sad Little Bitch.
Oh, my God.
He is a dog, mind you. Tried to make a bigger name for himself by tweeting this. Ayo, real Donald Trump, shut your punk ass up talking bleep about my Uncle Snoop Dogg before we pimp your wife and make her work for us. So, Lil Weenie just threatened the First Lady with sexual enslavement. I'd say that's a crime and punishable by jail time, but given the career of Little Shad, a.k.a. Knee Pad Shad, that would be a step up. It's got to be hard 20 years on to change nothing but your name. Meanwhile, don't hold your breath for any feminist or media outrage. It's not like he threatened Michelle Obama. Different rules apply. See, since Trump once said sexist stuff, Melania's open game. That's the argument from some feminists who are looking for any excuse to smear the woman. What cowards they are. Oh, well, the washed-up rapper has since deleted that tweet. I guess that makes Bow Wow a big meow. What should the Secret Service do, Kimberly? It's an actual threat. I mean,
yeah.
Killed him.
Yes. No, I would think it would be fantastic if Snoop and wannabe Snoop got a visit from, like, the federal marshals, and let's see how tough and gangster they are then.
Damn. She said kill them. Kill them over that. What happened to the free speech brigade? All right, so let's break this down in a variety of ways here. So with Bow Wow talking about Melania or whatever, we're going to pimp her or this or that. Reel it in, son. Reel it in. leave the First Lady out of it. You know, I don't like it when anybody talks about the kids of the president or the First Lady. Because honestly, they didn't even ask for it. Like, they don't – you think Michelle Obama knew when she married Barack Obama? Like, yeah, one day he's going to be president. A guy named Barack Hussein Obama – like, yeah, I'm just speculating. You think Melania Trump knew when she married this fucking buffoon who's rich born with a silver spoon in his mouth that this jackass would somehow become president, this reality TV star? She didn't know. So, it's just my thing. It's a matter of taste. Like, I don't bring them up because it's not necessary to bring them up. But that being said, he's Bow Wow's obviously not serious. He's not actually going to pimp her. And though it's a dickish thing to say, there is no law being violated, and it is free speech. So both things are true. You could be a tasteless prick for saying it, true, and also you still have the right to say it, and there shouldn't be, like, legal consequences. That's the first thing. Now, to Snoop Dogg shooting Trump in effigy by having a clown version of Trump in a music video and shooting him. Look, this is something where both sides are super hypocritical because – So Republicans do this all the time. Like when Obama was president, they shot him in effigy all the time. There were stores that sold fucking targets of Obama. Like they look like Obama, and the whole point is to fucking shoot it. So, and there was no outrage on the right when, you know, they were shooting Obama in effigy because they don't like Obama. So they say, this is free speech. Get over it. We're not actually shooting him, so get over it. And now Snoop effectively does the same thing. Shoots a clown version of Trump in a music video, and they go, oh, how dare you? You shouldn't shoot any president. Well, you guys were just shooting him in Obama in effigy not that long ago. So, but again, hypocrites on all sides here. So what's my takeaway on this? I kind of file it under the same category as Bow Wow. Like, yeah, you're kind of tasteless for doing it. Like, it's a prick move. But, yeah, you have free speech to do it. So I guess, like, I would advise against it, but since you did it, it's not like there should be legal consequences, and it's not like, you know, it should be against the law. I don't know. It's not cool, but you're allowed to do it, and everybody needs to get over it. You see what I'm saying? So both things are true. You could be an asshole, but at the same time, yeah, you're allowed to do it. It is freedom of speech. And again, there's hypocrites all over the place on this. Now, the final point here is the Fox host who said, kill him. Yeah, she's the most wrong. Because it doesn't even, like, okay, is she doing a direct threat of violence? No. And only a direct threat of violence and libel and slander, like, there's very few exceptions to the First Amendment. But those are them, like a direct threat of violence. I am going to kill you, and it is going to be at 7:36 p.m., and it's going to be at the corner of this street and that street. That's against the law to say that, because you can't do a direct threat of violence. So that's not a direct threat of violence, but it's a threat of violence, and that is just not cool. Full, don't do it. Again, since it's vague and generalized, it shouldn't be against the law, but, like, you know that that's just wrong, because I don't know. You're saying they should die over saying crude things or protesting in a crude way, you know? And I honestly think it's different when it's the president versus a regular citizen or even a celebrity. Like, shooting the president in effigy, even though it's tasteless, I'd argue, it's also kind of like a traditional thing in the U.S. where it happens with all the presidents. And it is a legitimate form of protest, like burning the flag. But if you do it, like, if you were to shoot, your neighbor's fucking doll you made in effigy, that's worse than, I think, shooting the president in effigy, because it's not, he's not, like, the ultimate public figure and the leader of the country. So it's not like you're protesting, you're just, like, kind of creepily wishing for their murder or something. You know what I mean? So by the same token, you saying, yeah, they should be killed, Snoop Dogg and fucking Bow Wow, over what is tasteless but free speech and free expression, no. And it seemed like she was somewhat serious, too, because she's like, yeah, they should be killed. And then it was like, I wish the marshals would, or the Secret Service would pay them a visit. Like, so really? You really want them to be killed? Like, what the fuck? So, I don't know. My overall takeaway for all of them is, everybody pump your brakes. Pump your brakes a little bit, reel it in. But yeah, free speech exists, and it's a thing, and you can be super duper tasteless and dickish, but you still have a right to do it. Just never cross that line into a direct threat of violence. Obviously, shooting the president is not a direct threat of violence in effigy, because in effigy it's super common, it happens under all the presidents, and it may be tasteless, but it's allowed. But I actually think it's worse when you say, like she did, kill Snoop or kill Bow Wow over the tasteless things they did. No. You're kind of a bigger dick for saying that. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Way out of time. I love you. Tomorrow, Kyle and Corin, you know the deal. YouTube channel at about 11 o'clock. Mwah, I'm out. Peace.